How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It is January 23rd, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are joined today by Lance Storm, who in fact was just on the show a couple of days ago. Spent an hour talking drugs, largely with Dave. I was there in the background, trying to, not fall asleep. I'm joking. How you doing, Lance?
I'm doing well.
I just felt like it's a subject we talked about 9 million times, you know what I mean?
Well, it's a subject that's never going to go away. So
that's the problem.
Some new issues with Lance Armstrong and so forth. Although I thought it was interesting, I don't know if you would have saw it, but on Entertainment Tonight, they had an interview with Sheryl Crow, his former fiance.
Oh, God.
And the one question she would not answer was whether she knew or not.
Well, there's your answer right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's your answer right there. The 10-minute afternoon update today, we talked about, well, I talked about, the new test that can detect CTE, concussion-induced brain damage, in living athletes, which is a breakthrough, because before, the only way they could determine if somebody was suffering from this was after they were dead, had to do an autopsy. And as noted in the update, now you can, determine when living if a guy has this problem. The problem is, as noted, that there's nothing that can be done. So good news and bad news in the sense that now they can maybe work on therapies and this new test will probably allow them to monitor whether the damage is getting worse or better based on the therapy or making no difference whatsoever. But my question to you, Lance, is you've wrestled a long time, never suffered what you believe was a major concussion. If you had the opportunity to take this test, would you do it?
I think I would, but I think most won't. I think you'll have a hard time getting people to take it, especially the people that you really want to take it, because you're going to want the guys that have had lots of concussions to see where they stand. And I think there's going to be a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there, again, males over 40 in particular, that won't have their prostate checked, or they don't want to have a colonoscopy because they don't want to know. And I could see the boys and, again, fighters and football players and stuff not wanting to know. Again, let's just, you were mentioning on the update, too, talking about the Nick Diaz, George St. Pierre fight. Could you imagine if one of those guys went and had it checked and found out they have a ton? You know what I mean? They're not going to want to know that. And I would imagine sports organizations aren't going to want people being tested. If you find out that half the fighters in UFC have a fair bit of this because of the concussive blows of getting punched, it's going to look horrible on the sport. The same thing with the NFL, same thing with pro wrestling. That if we find out that your sport most definitely causes this, there's going to be a lot of pressure to stop it. Or again, having people. No, you're going to have to retire because you're already showing signs of brain damage. We can't license you. And, there's going to be a lot of, controversy created by some of the results if we start finding out that people have it. But I think, especially at my stage in my career, if I went and had this test and find out that, yes, I most certainly have it, since I don't take many bookings anyway, I could certainly go where it's like, well, there's no way in hell I'm going to wrestle again. It's just not worth it. Because, again, it's not a major part of my income. It's just not worth the risk.
But taking bumps in your wrestling school is.
Well, again, and I would have to look at whether I'm going to really cut back or stop my demonstrating and no longer be the one that has matches and so forth. But then you start getting into that moral dilemma of, okay, was it the chair shots that I took in my career or the really stupid bumps, or is it just the jarring involved in pro wrestling what's doing that? And again, if you ended up testing 1,000 wrestlers and 1,000 of them had it, then someone's going to have to go, maybe taking bumps is a bad idea. And if you tested 1,000 boxers and 1,000 boxers have it, then you're going to have to realize that, maybe punching people in the head for a living is a really bad thing we need to stop. So it'll be certainly interesting on, if people are willing to get tested. It may end up bringing an end to the Sports Legacy Institute with the brain donor thing. If you can get the results before people die, you don't need to worry about collecting brain stems and brains once they're dead. They just need to get athletes to come in and get tested now.
A couple of things. First off, I don't know if I would get the test because I'm not wrestling right now. And I may have a match a year, but I don't even know about that. But I don't take any head trauma doing anything. There's not really any head trauma in jiu-jitsu. You're not even taking any falls or anything like that. But to me, for me personally, it would be like, okay, I take this test. This is different from like a colonoscopy. Because if you get that done and you realize, uh-oh, at least there's something that can be done. But with this, it's like, okay, if I went and got this test and it was determined that, in fact, I have brain damage, then what the hell can I do about it except worry? You know what I mean? Whereas I could see some fighters, like there have been a couple of fighters that have retired recently because they're concerned about their brains. And these guys, I mean, they just assumed they had brain damage and retired, as opposed to having the option of, you know what, let me go take this test. Let me look at the state of my brain. Maybe I'm completely, totally fine and free of brain damage. So I will take this risk to go another year and then get myself monitored again. You know, there are people that I think it would, this test would be something they would want to take. But I think there are also a lot of people that wouldn't want to know because right now there's nothing that can be done. I also think that leagues like the NFL and UFC, I think that they're not going to want to test their players for this, but I think they're going to have to. Because if it comes out that there is a way to determine whether your players or your fighters or your boxers have brain damage and you don't make that testing a requirement, then you're going to really open yourself up to lawsuits. There are already lawsuits from, you know, football players that they're upset that they suffered concussions and brain damage during their career. And I don't know all the specifics of these lawsuits, but it's all based around the fact that the NFL, they continued to play. And I think that if there is a test that will determine whether your brain is screwed up, and the NFL and UFC and boxing and whoever else does not require everybody to take this test when it is available, then you're really opening yourself up to lawsuits when guys suffer brain damage.
Oh, I agree, but when you're starting to deal with constitutions, institutions that are such a embedded part of society. Like, what if it is determined that contact football has let's just say an 80% brain damage rate of its athletes? You know, will the United States decide that this sport is too dangerous and outlawed? Will they stop? It's just such a huge can of worms that I'm not sure the world wants to open. And again, it's going to be interesting with the legalization of MMA in New York as an example. They constantly pull out the fact that, you know, this, it's barbaric, it's punching people in the head, and the Canadian Medical Association has tried to ban MMA because it's, you know, punching someone in the head, you're trying to cause brain damage to them. And it's like, now there's a test where we can go out there and find out if it is. And it'll be interesting, again, it could end up being the saving grace of MMA if, again, say they test 1,000 boxers and 1,000 MMA guys and the CTE is way lower in MMA than it is in boxing, then they've got statistical data going, we're safer than boxing. Leave us the hell alone. Or if it comes back being worse than boxing, or if it comes back being way less of a percentage than the NFL or the NHL, then, again, it's going to do a world of good for MMA. But if everybody comes back really bad, where do you draw the line and say, okay, you know, all of contact sports are causing brain damage in our athletes. We need to stop contact sports. I'm not sure society is ready to go there.
Well, I read an interesting article about football, believe it or not, and that is shocking given I'm not a sports fan. But basically, the article was was anti-helmet, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't believe it.
And they claimed that the statistics showed that there were significantly fewer concussions in football before helmets than there are today. And mm-hmm. and I guess the theory is that everyone puts on their helmets to protect their heads, but in reality, they presume their heads are safe, and so they go headlong into people right and left in practice on the field, and they end up suffering significantly more damage. It's the argument about gloves. Like, you know, people say, oh, well, bare-knuckle fighting is so much more brutal than boxing with these giant gloves. But in reality, bare-knuckle versus gloved boxing, I mean, the gloves are there to protect your hand, not a dude's head. You can only hit a guy so many times with your bare fist before you break your hand and you can't hit him anymore. Whereas you put on these giant gloves and you can punch a guy in the head for 12 rounds and be fine. So the gloves, actually, the small gloves in mixed martial arts, it's actually you're better off. Your brain is better off with the small gloves and the big gloves, and your brain would be better off with no gloves because you can only hit a guy so many times before you can't hit the guy anymore because you injured yourself. So the problem, I mean, this may very well be the case, that if you took helmets off everybody in football, people would be less likely to run headlong into each other. They would play in a manner where their heads were used less than they are nowadays with the supposed safe helmets. But at the same time, it's hard with statistics because who even knows what was considered a concussion back in the days before helmets? You know, this was 50, 60 years ago that guys had the pigskin thing on their head. Maybe more. You have to ask a football historian, but certainly a long time ago. And obviously, concussions are tracked significantly better today. So it could just be that the way that concussions are tracked has improved dramatically. And so really, there were the same amount of concussions, or maybe more concussions without the helmet. But it's impossible to say because of the way that people kept track of what was a concussion and what was not.
Well, I think the better comparison is, you know, when you look at rugby and Australian rules football and stuff, that they don't have pads and helmets. Tackling is just so much different. It does become more about a takedown than it does, let's just hit him as hard as we can and he'll get knocked over. And it really is, you know, it's the which I believe is illegal, but it still happens. You know, you're not supposed to do helmet-to-helmet spearing. But guys, you know, it still happens a lot. Guys tuck their head in and ram like a charging ram. You know, where you see the mountain goats and the rams and stuff where they actually just clash forehead to forehead. You know, it still happens. Guys lead with their head because, oh, I've got a helmet on. I think there is certainly an argument that tackling is safer with less padding. And there certainly is. And that's one of the problems with, people trying to govern MMA that don't understand it. And even my father-in-law, you know, he was just, you know, thought it was bare knuckle. It's so barbaric. I'm like, well, it's a hell of a lot safer than these gloves. Because if you actually punch somebody in the skull more than once or twice, you break your hand. So you're less apt to just, you know, rain down with 15 or 20 punches on a guy's head because you shatter your hands. But again, it's the, oh, it needs to be safer, let's put gloves on them. And it's like, well, it's people that don't really know what they're talking about regulating things.
Well, and that's not even regulating, but I'm talking about like the general public. I mean, can you imagine if you tried to explain to the general public that's concerned about violence in sports that we're going to make football safer by taking off the pads and helmets. We're going to make mixed martial arts and boxing safer by taking off the gloves. I mean, it's like, I don't even think you could ever even convince people of that.
No, but that goes back to, it's the numbing of people's senses and stuff by watching movie violence, where people will punt people in the face and punch people in the face 15 or 20 times and never break their hand. You know, you don't have to punch somebody in the skull very often and your hand will just be broken. You know, the fact that the guys break their hands when they're taped, wrapped, and have gloves on and they still manage to break their hands. You know, but again, people just get used to seeing what they see on TV and they don't understand things and pass judgment. But, it's going to open a big can of worms when we start testing people and seeing where the brain damage lies.
All right. On to, wrestling. You, worked. We mentioned this briefly on Sunday, the Hart Legacy show over the weekend in your, street clothes. And, how'd the whole thing go?
I was really happy with the match. I had a lot of fun. The show drew really well. Now, granted, I don't know how many were paid and whether there was paper or not, but there was a hell of a turnout. I've heard numbers of 1,000. I've heard 12. I've heard 18. It comes down to, I would imagine it was a couple hundred shy of whatever the pavilion can hold, because it wasn't jam-packed. There was a couple sides that were jammed, and then there was a side that, you know, you could put more people in if you had to, because the pavilion, the seating's bleachered, so there is just the long bench seat, so you can always fit more people in, and there was the, you know, the one side wasn't packed tight, but it was certainly a, you know, a fantastic crowd. I would be shocked if it was under 1,000 people, which for an indie show is fantastic. The pavilion's such a great building to work in, too. Show went really, really long. It was just over 4 hours. So in that regard, it was, you know, should have been tighter and held tighter. And there was a lot of talking. You know, they did a tribute to the legends of Stampede Pass at the beginning, which was fun, but went a little long. It was only 5 matches on the show. And all of them were multiple man matches, which, again, I wouldn't necessarily agree with if I was booking. But, again, there's a bit of a tie-in with Heart Legacy Wrestling and Conan and AAA. So I think it had a little bit more of a lucha flavor of the multiple man match they wanted to show. There was a 4-team double elimination tag match to open the show, which I was told was, if you like a lot of moves and big moves and near falls, is going to be one of the best matches you've seen in a long time. I only saw the last minute of the match, but was told it was pretty much, you know, if the match went 20 minutes, it was 20 minutes of near falls, just with constant stuff after stuff after stuff, which the crowd really liked. They were really hot for. Then there was a 12-man Royal Rumble thingy, and then there was a 3-team mixed tag match. So it was 6 people, 3 guys, 3 girls in that one. Then there was a thing I was involved with ended up being Davey Boy Smith Jr., Lance Archer, and myself against Chris Masters, Bobby Lashley, and Johnny Devine, which I thought was, as far as normal wrestling matches go, was the best normal wrestling match on the show. It was really the only normal wrestling match on the show that was a little bit more conventional and traditional. And then there was a 10-man tag, a lot of moves, a lot of stuff, a lot of chaos all over the place, craziness, excitement, matches, the main event. So there's a lot of action. The crowd seemed to really enjoy it. If they'd have kept it a little tighter, I think it would have been better. I heard there was a few hundred people that left between my match and the main event, because they put in an intermission there, too. So, you know, you were 3 hours into the show, and they're going into an intermission. I think there's a lot of people who said, you know what, I'm wore out and went home. But there was lots of action, and it was, you know, the pavilion's a great place. I believe, I don't know if it still is, but I would imagine so. You can stream it in an I pay-per-view format from the Heart Legacy Wrestling website. So if you're interested, you can, I think, go to Heart Legacy Wrestling, and you might be able to pay whatever they charge for it and stream the show if you're interested in seeing it. Certainly was an exciting show, and we'll see. I believe they're planning on doing more shows in February. I don't know if the monthly Calgary show is going to be pay-per-viewed all the time or what the deal is, but I would say it was a successful show, and I think for the most part the crowd enjoyed it. It was a great crowd. I was really impressed with the turnout.
Tell me about Teddy Hart's cat.
Yes, there was only one cat at the show, which is not a lot for him. Teddy likes his cats. I think he breeds them and has like 30 of them or something, but you almost never see him without a cat. And I know for the one promo, there was a cat sitting on a turnbuckle the whole time. And then I don't know if it's his wife, girlfriend, or just manager. I didn't get a chance to see her. But there was the one lady that had a cat on her shoulder pretty much the whole night. These white furry cats, for some reason, Teddy has a real interest in and never goes anywhere without a cat. So cat wasn't involved in the match, but there was a cat sitting on a turnbuckle through an entire promo.
A white cat, you say?
It's a white cat, yes. So I'm assuming a baby face cat.
Interesting. I was wondering if maybe they were like, if he breeds them, I wondered if maybe they were like those Savannah cats, because they're very intelligent. If you're going to have a cat do a run-in, then that's the kind of cat you'd want to try and train.
You'd want to try to try to train an intelligent cat. But yeah, he, I don't know if he breeds them and sells them and this is a side business or what, but he, and again, they're really nice cats and they seem to be all of the same breed. So I would imagine there's some kind of purebred cat of some kind, but I don't sit down and chat cats too much with Teddy.
I need to get him on the show and talk cats.
There you go. You could talk forever with the cats.
Also, we should talk a little bit about some other shows here. I know you actually watched it before I did, Sand Sharks, and you contend that Two-Headed Shark Attack is a better movie than Sand Sharks. I need an explanation for this. I can't believe it.
To me, they're both bad movies. They're never going to be, you know, something you'd go to the theater and see and be happy you spent $20 on.
I don't know.
And to me, there is a point where, I've got friends that like they have the weekly cheap-ass movie night where they try to find bad movies because they enjoy watching bad movies. And to me, there's a point when the movie gets bad enough, it becomes good because it's just so absurdly horrible. And to me, Two-Headed Shark Attack has gone beyond the, it's gotten so bad, I can laugh at it and enjoy it more, where Sand Sharks was just a poor movie. If you were just grading on a serious curve, Sand Shark was a better movie than Two-Headed Shark Attack. But because Two-Headed Shark Attack was so ungodly stupid and so poorly acted, that it became better by being worse.
Now, what about Monster Brawl with Kevin Nash and Herb Dean? Have you seen this film?
I have not, but I was thrilled to death when you said it was on Netflix because it is going to be in the queue for this week. I'm definitely going to be watching it by the weekend. I have to see this movie. It sounded atrocious. And when there's that many people in it that you know, I definitely have to watch it. And
that's
I know
right.
When you and Vinny mentioned Kelly Couture,
mm-hmm.
I know her. I've been on shows with her. She's part of the Squared Circle group in Toronto that, and again, I think Gail Kim and Angelina Love and Tracy Brooks, they all came from there. So she's, same with, Miss Dania, Johnny Devine's wife. You know, they all wrestled in the Southern Ontario group together. So, whenever there was a long time where, you know, a lot of TNA guys had worked BSC, you know, Bobby Roode and Tracy Brooks and all those guys. So that's why she's worked with a lot of the TNA people is she's always on those shows. She's actually a pretty decent worker and not hard to look at either, so she's had a fair bit of success at the
end. Oh, well, you need to watch this film then, because she's very hard to look at.
Oh, she's a vampire in this one?
I think she's I don't know what she is. I think she's a witch.
Ah, okay.
That's right.
So, I'll have to watch the movie and see. But
yeah, every movie that we review on the show is going to be on Netflix streaming, because I'm just going to get stuff off Netflix streaming. So, again, out there, if you got a good suggestion, send it to Brian at WrestlingObserver.com or at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. Those are my handles. So we've got a lot of good suggestions. Unfortunately, I was really excited for Girls Gone Dead with Jerry Lawler until I found out that he was only doing a cameo. I wanted him to be the star of this film. I didn't want to waste my time with the whole thing just for a...
So instead of going wild and getting naked, they go dead?
Well, I think they go wild, get naked, and then they go dead.
Oh, well, then it's not a total loss, at least.
Exactly.
Let me guess, the girls are all really young.
I don't know.
For the Jerry Lawler cameo.
I see, yeah. Well, you know, I presume so. I don't expect, 48-year-old moms going wild on college spring break, but you never know.
Well, they could be MILFs. They could be mummies you want to find.
Mummies I'd like to find, that's right.
Yeah.
This was a great movie. I just want you to watch it and tell me if it was better booked than, for example, last week's Impact.
I only watched half of last week's Impact, so...
I actually...
It probably can't be any worse booked than the John Cena promo on Monday.
That was terrible. But on the subject of Impact, I mentioned in the afternoon update today that TNA managed to win Best Television Show because WWE split the vote, and they also simultaneously won Worst Promotion, which is a hell of a thing to accomplish there, since... The promotion is entirely the television show, as of this year, pretty much. And the TV show has been a million times better. There's a lot of stuff on the show I think is really good. There's also a lot of stuff on the show, usually involving Aces and Eights, that I think sucks. But overall, that was an interesting result there in the Observer Awards this year. And what did you think of the wedding?
I hated it because I hate that kind of stuff. I'm not saying it was bad, it's just it's not the kind of wrestling I enjoy. A few things that I thought was funny. You put it over, but you know the reveal when Hogan came out to be with Brooke. I saw that and went, boy, that's nice of you to upstage your daughter and steal the her moment of the wedding. It's like, you know, she didn't even get to be the final reveal to walk down the aisle. It's like she comes out on the stage and then you upstage her. It's like, that's nice, Dad.
Well, it's the Hulkster.
It's the Hulkster, yes. Although, again, just to nitpick for the sake of it, but, you know, the absurdity of he's doing these speeches about how he's done everything he could to protect her from the business, and his objective isn't that she's going to get married on a wrestling show in a wrestling ring. It's bully.
Yeah.
Like, you think you'd want this, you know, why don't you get married in a church?
Why don't you keep her off Impact if you're concerned about the business?
Well, in TNA's defense, the angle was that Dixie brought her in and Hogan was against it.
I see.
So at least it wasn't him that brought her in. He was against it. But you would think if you were, you know, Dad, I really want you to walk me down the aisle, the conversation would be, I'll walk you down the aisle, but please just get married in a church and don't do it on a wrestling show.
Hmm.
I would have liked them to film it at a church rather than in the Impact Zone for the sake of being a little bit different. You know, you did the Bully Ray thing, you know, the bachelor party thing at a strip club. It's like you could have filmed in the afternoon in a church, and you could do it as a closed set so you wouldn't get spoilers. And part of me, too, just to dot I's and cross T's, it's like I was telling my students, it's like, you know what, if you did it off-site, you probably could have convinced Linda and Nick to come the day before and shoot them sitting in the pews of the church.
I see.
And then the next day do the stuff with Hogan and everybody else and edit it together and make it look like her mom and her brother and everyone was there.
I think Nick would have shown up if he was available. I don't even know what happened with Nick, but I think Linda wasn't there because she doesn't want to help Hulk in any way, so I don't see her showing up a day early. I don't see her being involved in any capacity in any way.
The other thing, too, that, again, this is just nitpicking to be a jerk because I want to because it's funny, but...
Are you telling me there's Frankenstein's monster and not Frankenstein? Is that what you're saying?
I'm with Vinny on that one, though, so...
Oh, Christ. All right, go on.
The absurdity of that Brooke Hogan's three closest friends in the world are people on the wrestling show that she's been at for less than a year.
Yeah.
Like, when you establish that we brought Tommy and Spike back because this is a real wedding and those are Bubba's real friends, and it's like, Brooke has no friends. It's the ring announcer and two knockouts.
She should have showed up with the guys from Shark Attack and Sand Sharks.
Even if you just, you know, even if it's just an extra or a girl that works in the office, if you had one other woman there that wasn't part of the TNA roster and just go, oh, this is Brooke's, you know, high school friend that she's been friends with for 20 years, just... That's just me wanting a little bit more credibility, but again, in the long run, it certainly doesn't matter. The three ladies look just wonderful in their dresses, and it really doesn't change anything. So I'm not, you know, bad-mouthing TNA for doing it. It's a wedding, and they got their angle across. But the thing that I didn't like was the Taz reveal, in that, to me, it was just such a Russo swerve. It's like, since he's up there with Bully, you're establishing that he's a, you know, a decade or 20-year-long best friend of Bubba's, and without any motivation whatsoever, he turned on him. It's like, why? It's like, yeah, it's a surprise. Nobody sees it coming, but there's no motivation for him to turn on Bully.
Well, maybe they'll have an explanation next week.
Be curious how they explain a lifelong friend just turned on him out of the blue.
Hmm.
They probably never will. He's just aces and eights for no other reason.
You've never turned on a lifelong friend, Lance?
No. But even if you had a lifelong friend you had a falling out with, it's not all of a sudden. And then if you really want to get silly, if, you know, with the aces and eight thing, the angle for months now is we have to hide our identity. We have to stay masked. When the guy gets their mask pulled off, it's like, oh my God, you've really screwed up here. Why did Taz reveal himself? Could they not have jumped him before he took off his jacket? There was no reason for Taz to reveal himself as part of aces and eights. The guys could have just come out and jumped him.
Especially since Taz was on the voting committee for Gut Check. So you would think that he would want to help certain guys get into the promotion if they'd agree to be in Aces and Eights.
Yeah, like, and then it was, why did you need to get Al Snow out of the way so D'Lo could be the Aces and Eights guy that's going to be revealed eventually that, you know, that's how they got Wes Briscoe in. It's like, well, you already had Taz in that spot.
That's right.
So the reveal makes no sense. It was a Russo swerve. And I'm interesting, too, because I think you brought up the thing. Since most weddings get foiled because one of the people in the wedding party turn on the other one, you know, either the bride or the groom, it's like, okay, you guys got your, you're still in love, so why don't you either go down to a church or the Justice of the Peace, whatever, and finish your wedding? How are they going to explain why they don't get married now?
Actually, you you weren't on the board, but I have explanations for all of this.
Oh, good.
Yes. The Taz deal is he is going to be the Aces and Eights commentator.
Ugh.
They felt that he had run his course as a babyface, and he does commentary on the show that airs tomorrow, and I was told that he did a very good job. So make of that what you will. And
this angle is so played out already.
And as far as the wedding, regardless of what was said on the show or the spoilers, I was told that, in fact, they are married in storyline now.
Ah.
Yes.
So they're a husband and wife.
Bully Ray and Brooke are now married.
Well, kudos for them. But, and that's one thing, you know, you talked about, you know, it being the best show. And to me, the thing that Impact is missing, because, again, the show has improved a ton. But it's just been those couple angles that they drag on for forever, and they overstay their welcome. It's like, you know, there was the Abyss Joe Park thing, where it was like, you know, they were starting to tease, okay, and make us think that, oh, you know, Joe Park is, in fact, Chris Abyss, and they tease that he switches back and forth. And it's been just going on forever now that they almost never mention Abyss anymore. You know, they did the searching for Abyss, and it just went on forever, and then it just, well, Joe Park's just a character now. And it's like...
Best non-wrestler. Or no, best character? What was it? He won something in the Observer Awards.
You know, it's like when it first started and it's the search for Abyss, if you cared at all, it's gone on so long now that never did anything that it overstayed its welcome. And the Claire Lynch thing, you know, it started one direction and was bad, and they changed the direction and it was bad, and it was going on forever. And then, again, not their fault, but then it just had to be just wrapped up and thrown in the garbage. And Aces and Eights was okay when it started. It should have wrapped up at the pay-per-view before the Bound for Glory pay-per-view, where they revealed that it was actually, you know, Robert Roode, and he won the title from Austin Aries, and they continued with the James. You know, it should have wrapped up there, but it's just gone on forever. You know, it was like, who are these guys? And they gained access, and we still don't know who these guys are, and they're around longer, and well, they kidnapped people before, and it's like they're just heels on the show now, and it's like the angle's gone on too long, and they're trying to do these HBO television drama type angles, and they just go on too long.
My two issues are with Aces and Eights. If you had, pardon the pun, an ace in the hole, if, for example, you had surreptitiously got a verbal agreement from, say, Randy Orton, that at lockdown this year, he was going to jump ship, and some dude was going to pull off his mask, and the leader of Aces and Eights was Randy Orton. If you had that in your back pocket, fine, drag the goddamn thing out. But I don't think they have an ace in the hole. What, it's going to be a big reveal of D'Lo Brown? You know what I mean? Like what? Where is this going? What do we have here that's your big payoff at the end? Because I've been waiting a long time, and I have a strong feeling I'm not going to get that payout. That's my issue with that storyline. And with Joe Park, the thing with Joe Park, I love Joe Park. I love the storyline. I'm a big fan of all, except for one thing. Abyss disappeared, and Joe Park showed up to find him. And there was a day where Abyss returned, and he returned, and he told his brother to quit looking for him, and then we never saw Abyss again. It would be one thing if, like, Abyss disappeared, and he's never been seen since Bully Ray beat him up, and Joe Park is still here, he's still looking for his brother has never been found, it was a mysterious disappearance. But Abyss has returned. Abyss is not missing. Abyss came back months and months and months ago. So where's he been? Did he retire? Did he go to another promotion? Where's Abyss been this whole time? I at least understand dragging out the Joe Park thing. I don't know where they're going, but my assumption is that Bully Ray is actually with Aces and Eights. He has been the entire time. And he's going to eventually join up with them again. And it's all going to go full circle. And somehow you're going to have Joe Park and Bully Ray in like the final match to have Joe Park and Abyss finally get their revenge on Bully Ray. But Abyss having returned, like, to me, just kind of ruined the whole thing.
Yeah, they're keeping an angle going after there's no point for it anymore. And to me, that's my biggest complaint. You know, Daniels and Kazarian are really entertaining. Aries is good. Rude is good. James Storm, when they don't have him as an epic failure, is good. But these storylines that just go on forever and don't go anywhere. And, you know, unfortunately, it's, again, the Claire Lynch thing that went on forever, and it's like a point where it's like, who cares? And the Joe Park thing, it's like, I don't know why Joe Park's still around. His brother showed up, but he's still hanging around. And after being there for, God, how many months now, still on occasion is unsure how to get into the ring. I don't know how this mentally challenged person is a successful lawyer. He's just a comedy, unbelievable character that has, to this point, it's like, I don't even care what the payday is when it happens. And Aces and Eights, unfortunately. Like you say, if they had a Randy Orton or a Big Show or someone in the end that was like, oh my God, I can't believe it's him, then, and for whatever reason, it's like, shit, we have to wait 4 more months, then it's like, you know, okay, it's going to suck, but let's, you know, it's worth it for the reveal. But like you say, if the reveal is, oh my God, it's Wes Briscoe, what's Bischoff's first name?
The kid. Garrett.
Garrett, you know,
with one R.
Briscoe, Garrett Bischoff and D'Lo. It's like, I waited a year for this.
Yeah. The John Cena promo, we got to make sure we talk about that. What are your thoughts on this? Was this the worst promo you've ever seen?
I think so.
Yeah.
Very well could be. What I'm hoping, because the thing that I thought was odd, the show went off the air like 8 minutes early. The show was 8 minutes shy of 3 hours, at least the one up here.
Edited. It definitely went over the top of the hour here.
Okay. Well, then we had something edited out. Maybe they edited out some of the... Because,
I wish I'd edited out the John Cena promo.
Okay, because what I assumed happened, because, again, last week it was, you know, 3 hours and 20 minutes or something, and this week the show was 8 minutes shy of 3 hours. I assumed they were getting to the end of the show and went, holy shit, we've run short. And Cena was supposed to go out and do a two-minute, I'm going to win the Royal Rumble, by God, and then they send all the guys out for the brawl. And they realize, shit, I was kind of hoping it was like, John, we need you to stretch for an extra 12 minutes. Go out there and say something. And at least he was just trying to fill off the cuff. But yeah, because for some reason the show ended up being 8 minutes short up here.
It's weird.
So I assumed that John was just out there pulling stuff out of his butt, trying to stall. But I found the making fun of the kid for waking up in a bed with his own body fluids and stuff was just uncomfortable. It was like, boy, you're really being a dick.
Yeah.
And again, especially on No Name Calling Week, and you're making fun of this guy in the front row, it's like, boy, it was bad.
Yeah, apparently Rock does a great promo on SmackDown. I know there's a really good commercial for Rock and Punk on our front page right now that they're going to play on all the shows, and I think they're doing the stat video on SmackDown.
God, I hope so.
But it's just like, I mentioned last night, what was preventing you from doing all this stuff on your show that was 3 hours long and has been 3 hours long every single Monday for the last month? I mean, I realize that there are millions of people that watch SmackDown, but it's still the B show. Like, it'd be one thing if Raw was an hour and you ran out of time. We had 3 hours. And I look at some of that stuff on the show, and it's like, okay, so you had to give this Caitlyn match this much time. You couldn't have cut a minute off it and showed the one-minute Rock commercial. You couldn't have cut a few minutes off John Cena to show that Royal Rumble stat video. I mean, there's so much stuff on that show. I mean, beat the clock. You could have shortened every beat the clock match by 2 minutes and saved yourself 8 minutes to put some video packages or... You know, some extra stuff to actually build up your pay-per-view. I don't know. Again, I've said it 1,000 times. The show's going to do great. The Elimination Chamber's going to do great. WrestleMania will probably break records. I understand that. That's fine. But still, I would like to be excited for these shows on top of knowing they're going to do good business.
Yeah, and who's to say it couldn't do even better business?
Sure.
Another thing, and it's just a, you know, it's a dotting T's and crossing I's thing for me, but the beat the clock thing, they needed to come up with a reason why Big Show's match wasn't beat the clock and Ryback's match wasn't. Because when they announced that it's a beat the clock thing and Randy Orton goes out and wins his match in 11 minutes and whatever many seconds, and then the very next match, Big Show wins in a minute. And they just ignore it, and then Ryback goes out and wins in a minute, and then they come back with, well, he's got to win in less than 11 minutes. And I'm like, well, what about those other guys? And
well, at least with Ryback, he's in the Rumble, but Big Show, it wouldn't matter anyway because he's not in the Rumble. He's in a title match.
But he'll end up being in the Rumble. But that's where, again, this is the dotting the T's. It's like, so when Big Show comes out, why don't you say that he's got a world title match at the Royal Rumble? We're not even, as of yet, he's not even entered into the Royal Rumble, so he's not part of Beat the Clock. Okay, great. And then with Ryback, especially when he's doing a Royal Rumble promo, you've got to come up with a reason. And even if you have to just find, let's say, JTG, and he beats JTG, but when the match starts, they point out that since JTG isn't in the Royal Rumble, this match isn't Beat the Clock either. Just to give us a reason and an explanation on why these guys, and Ryback in particular, who's in the Royal Rumble, wins his match in better time than those other guys, isn't in consideration. It's just, it leaves your fans going, well, what about him?
Problem is, I think they need 30 bodies for the Rumble, and JTG and every other dingbat's going to be in the Rumble. And
then use the indie geeks, something.
And with Ryback, I mean, I don't want to see a 12-minute Ryback match with JTG.
No, you don't, but then you've got to come up with something. Put him in a handicap match where he's fighting two guys. And that way, it can't be beat the clock, because if the other guys win, which one of them would be eligible? You just got to come up with an excuse. And that's where, I know it was on a different thing, but it was a saying Raven had before, too, because guys, well, we can't do that because, you know, how do we explain it? And it's like, well, you have to come up with an explanation. That's your job. And you have to find a way, and it's like, okay, what do we do? Well, if you put them again in a two-on-one match, then this can't be a beat-the-clock because it's not a singles match. Okay, great. And it saves the problem. You've just got to find a way so that this stuff makes a little bit more sense.
Now, the any other thoughts on Raw?
The Miztacular figure four was tremendous. For those of you who don't follow Shane Helms on Twitter, he dubbed his new move the Figure Forgot because he forgot how to do it properly.
That's a good one.
Which I popped for so huge. Shane Helms is hilarious. He dubbed it a Helmsism. I think it's Shane Helms Com is his name on Twitter. He's definitely worth following. He's entertaining during Raw. But yeah, it was the Figure Forgot. In Miz's defense, I think it—you know—this
I got to hear. In Miz's defense, everyone,
his leg slipped out of his hand and he lost Dolph's leg. And because the clock was running and they had to get this match in under the beat the clock, he rushed and screwed up. It's not like Miz doesn't know how to do a figure four. He slipped. He panicked. The clock was running. He rushed and he botched the figure four. It's, again, at the end of the day, it is, he botched the move, and it's an epic disaster considering he was just given the move by Ric Flair last week, and he botched it this week. But there's a lot of people like, how can he not know how to do this move? It's like, well, he knows how to do the move. He had to do it in a hurry. He didn't have time to reset and start over, and he put on a shitty figure four. But
Lance,
Miz is quickly turning into the biggest disaster of a babyface ever.
How many times in your career have you put on a figure four?
Not a ton, but several.
Have you ever dropped the leg?
No.
I did that move in many, many, many matches. I never dropped the leg. I understand that's maybe what happened, but it's your move, dude. Don't drop the leg.
Mm-hmm. Although,
I'm just appalled.
There has been one worse figure four.
Yes, Hogan.
No.
Really?
I don't remember which show. If I had to guess, it'd be the Capital Combat from 90 with Luger and Flair.
Oh, God.
Luger managed to put a figure four leg lock on Ric Flair, but he used his wrong leg in the middle so that when he crossed Ric Flair's leg over the top, the foot was sticking out the side where Luger's free leg wasn't.
Oh!
So instead of...
How the hell do you do that? I don't even understand how you can even do that.
So he didn't do a spin.
He just stepped inside and then crossed it over.
Yeah, he crossed over the leg on the wrong sides when it was up the top and he went to lay down. His foot was on the wrong side of Flair's foot.
Dude, is this move that hard?
I remember just laughing so hard because it's one thing to screw up a figure four, but doing it in a match with Ric Flair, I can just imagine Ric Flair laying on the mat with, what the hell did this idiot just do?
So how did he cover for it?
I don't remember whether I think Flair ended up ending up just kicking him off because once he got it like that and started to lay down and couldn't hook the foot anymore, they just sort of separated and didn't sit and work the hold.
So I guess Miz should take solace in the fact that he's now done the third worst figure four of all time.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yes, but he's not. Granted, the company's not helping him any in the babyface department, but he's not helping himself either.
Giving him the moniker of like the new Ric Flair is like just that. I'm not the biggest Miz fan, but I feel bad for the guy. I mean, you just can't do that. Why would you give that to the Miz except to sabotage his career?
Oh, it really is. There's, you know, if he did everything perfectly, it's probably still not going to work because there is only one Ric Flair and nobody's filling those shoes.
No, not even Shawn Michaels didn't try to become the next Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm. I certainly wouldn't want to have to take the Nature Boy moniker from Ric Flair and then trying to, it's like, man, that's shoes that are impossible to fill. And then when you're not a particularly like babyface to begin with, and again, a lot of that is, you know, he had the worst babyface turn of all time. And then he doesn't seem to have changed his obnoxious personality at all as a babyface, which is questionable.
Yeah. All right, Lance, let's do some plugs here.
Alrighty. My website, stormwrestling.com, which will take you to my regular site where I post some commentaries. And I do want to do a write-up on the Hart Legacy Show and get that up soon. Also takes you to my wrestling school, Storm Wrestling Academy, where I am the instructor. I'm the one that gets in the ring and teaches you and demonstrates with you and wrestles matches with you. I'm a hands-on instructor. I'm in the midst of my January session. My May session may be completely full. I think I have to cap it. I think it has reached its parameters. But drop me an email. There's a possibility one more person can fit into May. I run January, May, and September every year. It's 12 weeks. Information's on the site. Again, I've had students that are working in Mexico, Japan, several in WWE right now and developmental. Anyway, check that out at Storm Wrestling. I'm on Facebook. There's a Lance Storm official Facebook page there that you can find. There's a link for my site. And thanks to a really cool fan, I'm trying to remember his name now. I think it's Gavin O'Connor or O'Connor Gavin or something. He coughed up the at Lance Storm on Twitter name, so I am now at Lance Storm on Twitter.
Huge improvement.
Yes, and it's nice to actually have a real fan, because when I went and just asked the dude, it's like, would you mind giving me the name, because it is my name, and there was a bunch of people who was like, oh man, he's a rich wrestler, you can charge him a lot of dough, and he was just a good fan that went, absolutely, I've been a fan for a long time, if you want it, here you go. So it was nice to have a real fan that just wants to be a fan and be a cool guy. I actually had a photo of him and I from a show in Timmins, and I remembered him.
Really?
Yeah. And so he was a nice guy he's got a brownie points with me for down the road if ever need be, but Lance Storm on Twitter now. So also, too, might as well plug him. I've got two ebooks on Amazon, Storm Warning and Storm Front. I think they're like $5. Tales from My Career, and they're pretty entertaining, so you can check those out either on Amazon.ca. .com, .uk, .whatever the 6 or 7 Amazon sites there are around the world. So you can check those out.
That's right. That is an Amazon exclusive book. And I believe that despite it being a exclusive to Amazon, it did very well in the Wrestling Observer Book of the Year Awards.
Really?
I don't know if you've seen that yet. Apparently not.
Nope.
All right. Let's find out. Stormfront by Lance Storm came in fourth.
Well, there you go.
That's right. Behind Shooters by Jonathan Snowden, Heroes and Icons by Oliver Johnson and Mooneyham, and Booker T's book. So there you go.
Well, not too shabby then.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up. Don't forget to check out stormwrestling.com. Everything that Lance talked about is available through stormwrestling.com. Twitter, information on the wrestling school, all of his the personal stuff on his personal website, the Q&As, the columns. There's a lot of stuff up there. And wrestling school as well. As noted, he's got wrestlers working all over the world, including several signed to WWE developmental. They've worked on reality shows. They're working in different promotions all over the place, Australia, Mexico, the U.S. So if you want to be a pro wrestler, Lance's school is the place to go. 12-week session. So check it out at stormwrestling.com. Check me out, Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, and of course, WrestlingObserver.com as well. We are out of here. Thanks again for listening. Back later on tonight with more. We'll talk to you again after a while.